Welcome to the Total Connector Show, another special sub-series called Limitless Rabbit Hole with my regularly reoccurring co-host, Tip or Thibaut Maréchal. What a beautiful name. Sounds so poetic.
Okay. Highly unexportable. Hi, Kevin.
How are you doing? Tip, what's happening? I mean, I've got so much. I had two amazing interviews yesterday. My head is a little bit imploding because it's so much stuff to do right now. Because I'm also planning to do like a media a project with a bunch of other people to a spectrum of other of other topics, which are all interconnected somehow, you know, with money, with Bitcoin, with this whole evolutionary potential that we have. So why don't you start out? Because I have so much in my head right now. I have a couple of topics that I want to talk to you about, but what's been going on lately? What do you think?
Yeah, many things. Definitely, you know, I was on the bus this morning listening to Stefan Levera and his recent podcast with Chris Mayer. Mm-hmm. And I think the proof of keys movement is shaping up quite nicely for the coming January 3rd, which is exciting. We're seeing him appear on a bunch of different podcasts, and I've seen the proof of key, like the little icons that people now put in their handles on Twitter. So that is pretty, it's a pretty cool event happening. Really looking towards helping a few friends who actually bought Bitcoins on custodial exchanges that left the Bitcoins over there, and they reached out and they were like, hey, you know, we've heard of that because we're following you, and we're like, okay, how do we do this, right? Is there anything in particular? What hardware wallet should I use? Or, you know, like really, you know, really practical concerns. When it means that now, not only thinking about it, they're actually planning on doing it. So it's becoming real. So that's I think is it's pretty cool. And there's, you know, even compared to last year, there's so much more documentation online. You know, this resource, I think it's bitcoin-intro.com, which really gives a comprehensive guide in terms of how to use Bitcoin. So not only the sort of like overview on the protocol and all that, which are extremely valuable, but actually the practical guide in terms of, you know, running a full node or, you know, holding your own keys, the security models around that, and so on and so forth.
Let me ask you something. Yeah, because I listened to the interview of Trace Meyer on Stephen Levera today in the morning. It was the first thing I did. And the proof of keys concept, you know, and the ID, the initiative, I guess it was initialized by Trace Meyer, is a great thing. I find it wonderful because he's actually, as far as I know himself, partial or, you know, a majority shareholder of Kraken, which, to be honest with you, I'm a user of Kraken. I'm a huge fan of Kraken because they were always, you know, I had the feeling they were always, always been top notch when it comes to security updates, ethos. The only problem I have, I'm gonna, you know, not circumvent this whole topic, is this whole altcoin shitcoinery on the exchange. I don't get it, because on the one hand, there, you know, a lot, you know, not only Trace Meyer, but all these other people who are working for Kraken, such as Dan Held, are preaching, you know, water and about Bitcoin and about the ethos of Bitcoin. But then on the other hand, somebody's got to be the bag holders of all these shit coins on the, you know, so you know, that's the essence of my preaching is ethos. And if I cannot stick to my own ethos that I'm preaching, then I'm not good for it, you know. So this is the problem I have. I'm not gonna, you know, lie about it. It's my honest opinion. I don't care, you know, but I'm gonna just say it.
Brilliant. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No. And just one more thing, and what the proof of keys concept is concerned. Anyway, And I've said that. I mean, why wait? Why not, you know, create awareness and consciousness in the minds of the people who have been buying and literally storing their Bitcoin on an exchange? Why not do it immediately? I wouldn't like, you know, pull this thing off, you know, like a birthday or Christmas thing. Like, we need to wait for a specific date. Why January 3rd? Why can't you tell people, do it as soon as possible, do it immediately?
So I agree with that sentiment, and that's an ideal world that I would love us to all live in. Now the reality is, look, people are busy, and we spoke about this before, but you know, most of my friends who now own a little bit of Bitcoin, they do not have the time, or did not take the time, because they didn't see it as a priority up until now, to actually look into the practical reality of holding your own Bitcoin keys. And so it's much easier to just delegate that to a trusted third party. And that's what people do mostly for, I would speculate, a majority of Bitcoins that are currently available for hodling. They sit on exchanges. And so, you know, the thing that Tracemayer did, this proof of key event, it really is interesting in terms of building habits and rituals for the community. And you can basically build a much stronger, sticky narrative around that, which I think Bitcoin we're full of rituals already. And I was briefly speaking with Gigi about this last time on Twitter, like this, all these rituals, like, you know, whether it's the pizza day that we have, whether it's that, well, January 3rd, now proof of keys, and also the anniversary of Bitcoin, celebrating the release of the white paper on the 31st of October, you know, all these events. And so proof of key is just one of them. Again, it's part of that. It's building a ritual into the Bitcoin block height calendar, right? And so new Bitcoiners, will learn that, I assume, and will then preach it to other people. So in terms of, I would say, like, you know, narrative distribution, it's pretty efficient, but for sure, like, ideally everybody should do it right away. And I think what's happening is, once you've done your first proof of key, then you're much more inclined to actually do it all the time once you purchase Bitcoin on a custodial exchange, right? Yeah, and on that note, I think it'd be really exciting also for services who provide custody as a service, companies that provide custody as a service, to actually participate in that as well. Like, not, again, like this notion that everyone should hold their own keys, and I agree with that. But for the players who can't really do that, then the counterparties providing that service should also prove that they have the assets that they claim to have. And ideally, they should also prove that their liabilities meet those assets. So it includes a little bit of a more of a sophisticated, like, financial statement auditing for that part, and making sure that those two things match. That would be exciting. And the reality right now is we don't see that. Right.
Okay, let me top that with a you know, I think it's an, I don't even think it's an original idea, but wouldn't it be awesome to top that with a proof of, what would you call it, proof of bank run? Like, on that same day, on January 3rd, people are going to withdraw the Bitcoin to the hardware wallet, and at the same time, on that same day, on January 3rd, go to the bank and withdraw, I don't know, 3/4 of the fiat, and put it, like, we could start with the Bitcoiner community. Like, we could do that, literally. What if we all went to the bank and say, where's our money?
Dude, I have nothing in my bank account.
Not even petty cash for your daily expenses, because, you know, we're still living
in
these crazy
of course.
Times.
I still have a little bit of dirty fiat, but that float is thin. And I mean, you know, sure, but the thing is, with cash, because it it devalues, like the incentive is less interesting, right? This notion that sure, you get your cash and the bank, definitely if everybody were to do that, the reality is like most banks would fail. Because I think the average leverage for these banks is in the 15 to 20x, right? So for every dollar that they have in their custody, quote unquote, there's 20 claimable IOUs on that top, which is insane. But anyway, we know that. But I mean, it's happening out of necessity, unfortunately, bank runs. And I think that's what Trismir was covering on the podcast with Stefan de Vera, speaking about Rothbard, who was actually a big proponent of that, of coordinated bank runs.
Right, right.
And I don't know if you remember, but a few months ago now, the Yellow Vests in France tried to do a few of those.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bank runs.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Most people know that it's a leverage. And I think it is something that unites people. This notion that if we are getting together to sort of claim our monetary sovereignty in a way by getting physical cash, even though cash is still, the fiat is still against monetary sovereignty, it's still on the spectrum of monetary sovereignty. I would say perhaps a bit better than getting, you know, negative interest rate charged onto your account. Like the new chairman of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, is advising. But it's it's a movement that's been happening, and I wonder if it's truly gonna happen, because if something on a scale large enough were to happen, let's say in European banks, I mean, it can quickly spread to a bunch of countries, and then it becomes a big issue, because bank runs in the end, it creates chaos, right?
Yeah.
Same for proof of keys. I mean, last year there's been this exchange had an issue. I forgot the name. And now I saw on Twitter this morning, HitBTC, apparently, which is a massive exchange. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They've had, their clients had issues withdrawing, and there's this poor Russian guy who was tweeting about it, and he's got roughly $160,000 worth of Bitcoin on there, and can't see any of it. And he's been waiting for 2 weeks, contacted customer support, no answer, no nothing. I mean, it's crazy. Because if you really think about what exchanges are, if you leave your coins over there, they're basically banks with no standards, no regulatory oversight, mm-hmm. no FDIC insurance. So they're the riskiest counterparties that we've seen in a long time. Proof of keys is really great, and I'll be one of the preachers of that to my friends in the days to come until we get there. It's only in 23 days, I think, 22 days. So it's we're getting pretty close to it.
What day is that? That is, let me see, what day is that? January 3rd is Friday. Okay. My time. So interesting. Well, the thing is, I was just thinking it would really send a really strong message to everybody else, to the outside world, who haven't been red pilled yet. Like, do this in synchronicity. You withdraw your Bitcoin, you make a tabula rasa on your exchange. You're clean and safe on your hardware wallet, and at the same time, whatever, I mean, maybe not literally like withdraw the money from your, but at least like do a, like you withdraw some fiat to your Bitcoin exchange or something like that, So I thought that would be, a cool event. It would be a multiplier. But I don't know. It's just the way I imagine things, maybe.
Like a bundled stack, stacking sad day. Yeah.
Okay, so the other stuff I want to talk to you about is, did you listen to the whole interview with Trace Meyer?
I haven't finished it yet.
Okay, but did you get to the point where he started talking about coin joining? Where
he's... Not on this one, but I've heard Trace Meyer speak about coin joins in other podcasts.
So essentially he's saying it's a risky thing to do. It's not good. It's highly dangerous or whatever. I mean, paraphrasing him. It's definitely not good for your privacy, because if you're coin joining and you might, I mean, I don't know, is that really the probability that you're coin joining somehow? First of all, they can unwind this whole thing. I mean, I'm not a crypto, but could they literally like unwind coin joining transactions, which could theoretically be tied to a potential or alleged terrorist in North Korea? This is something he said. So I mean, I was like, okay. I mean, and then Stefan at the end said, you know, in his monologue, he said, well, he's still a fan of CoinJoin because it will keep a base layer of, you know, sort of a basis of privacy. You can still preserve a basis of for privacy. What do you think about CoinJoin and coin mixing?
I think different layers of this protocol stack ought to optimize for different trade-offs and realities. And as we've discussed, and as most people know, the base layer needs to have that uncompromising verifiability and immutability of data. So the immutability of data is irrelevant in that discussion, but the verifiability is. And so for a system to be verifiable, you need transparency and you need to be able to audit it. And that's what full nodes do on a regular basis. They audit the entire supply of Bitcoin and they audit the transaction and data integrity of the ledger. Beautiful. You cannot have, with the current technologies that are out there, privacy technology at the base layer without a compromise, a trade-off being made on that verifiability. Unless we're speaking about Schnorr and Taproot, for instance, which brings, you know, a decent amount of privacy enhancing properties by, for instance, abstracting away the schemes in the spending of Bitcoin UTXOs. You don't know if, you know, three people sign on that transaction or if it's one. Like, all of that is abstracted away. So that is a great privacy enhancement.
Just to interrupt you, sir, I think that was then afterwards what Trace Meyer was subsequently arguing about, that it would be, yes, it would be cool if it would then, you know, you could enhance the privacy on the second layer, Lightning Network, you know, with all the, you know, Schnorr, Taproot, all these technologies on top of that, and even Mimblewimble he talked about. So that's why I wanted really to have your take. Like, is it
Mimblewimble? They had an issue recently.
Yeah.
So again, it testifies to the risk of deploying confidentiality and privacy focused tech in the base layer. And CoinJoins, again, I believe personally that they work extremely well today if you do them properly, especially in post-mixing, UTXO reconsolidation. So if you remix UTXOs that you had mixed in different rounds, then sure, you can like basically you break the anonymity set. But now, that being said, CoinJoins, they're... it's mathematically proven. Chomian coin join technology, if you go beyond a certain set of anonymity, it is not traceable. And when you speak to blockchain analysis companies, they will tell you two things. We can't track Lightning Network routing, and we cannot track coin join mixing. That testifies to the efficiency of those two technologies, which appeared on layers on top of Bitcoin base layer. So, you know, we've looked at, you know, confidential transactions, the stuff that Blockstream deployed on Liquid, another second layer privacy enhancing technology that is making all the trade-offs. Like, it's a federated chain, so it requires trust, and it is technically censorable. So, and also confidential transactions on the technical side, they take twice as much storage, you know, in terms of bytes per mm-hmm. transaction. So on the base layer, again, that wouldn't work because you would double the rate increase in terms of storage requirements for the blockchain, and therefore the full nodes would need to be much stronger in terms of hardware, in terms of bandwidth, and therefore you basically affect the censorship resistance of Bitcoin and its decentralization. So again, unacceptable, cannot happen, will not happen, hopefully. And that's why privacy enhancing tech should exist on second layers. Now, going back to coin joins, truly believe that coin joins will be an attack surface for Bitcoin UTXOs in the future, meaning that I could totally see, and that's a very speculative opinion of mine, but that's what we're here for. I could totally see coin join mixing services and the UTXOs that were from those coin joins, because again, it's pretty easy when you look at the blockchain, if you do like forensic analysis, like it's pretty easy to see like when a UTXO comes from a coin join. And these could basically be rendered tainted or treated as illegal Bitcoins in a way by all exchanges and all custodial services that are by default regulated businesses that are supervised by jurisdictional specific agencies in the form of, you know, whether they're fall under MSB license requirements or any other type of regulatory requirements that would make sense in that particular jurisdiction. And so I could totally see in the future these Bitcoins being traded on a perhaps a black market of UTXOs that are coin joined and that are truly fungible, but within that excluded subsegment. And I think in the future, it won't matter, but there will be a short term, medium term attack.
I got you. Now making the connection, because Trace Mice, I have to re-listen to that. Maybe I'm curious, maybe what you're going to say next time once you finish listening to it, because he meant, because at the end he said, well, they could do this in the future or something like that. They could, you know, track it or whatever, find out. You could then allege everybody, you know, being a terrorist, a criminal, and all of this shit. I mean, when the shit really hits the fan in a Aurelian nightmare. But this is, I'm already thinking ahead, you know. So maybe he meant in the future, not now, because as you said, like if you talk to this technology specialists, what do you call it, like blockchain companies. They cannot trace it back, right? So they cannot unwind this.
At this moment, but and that's the beauty of mathematical proofs, is mm-hmm. that even if you scale the amount of computation that you can deploy on a given problem, whether it is to, you know, reverse irreversible SHA-256 mm-hmm. functions, for instance, or in the case of CoinJoin, try to sort of somehow retrace those untraceable UTXOs. I mean, you still are bound by math proofs that testify that, again, even if you're putting a lot of money and very creative, extremely efficient technologies, there is a theoretical limit that cannot be reached today unless we have a massive change in the current computational, you know, paradigm, like quantum computing, and you know, I know we speak a lot about this in the Bitcoin community. And even so, maybe with quantum computing, again, this is where I'm reaching the limit of my technical literacy for that, but how breakable is CoinJoin technology when it comes to the impossibility of traceability? Mm-hmm. That would be a good research paper to read or write. Maybe it's out there. I haven't seen it yet. And I will look into it. But I think for now, at the moment, it's not a risk at all. Will it become a risk in 10, 15 years? Maybe. But I'm quite certain that by then we'll have other technologies that should, if necessary, replace the function of coin joins in terms of making Bitcoin UTXOs fungible.
Right. Okay. Do you have an opinion on the difference between your personal experience on the difference between Wasabi's CoinJoin and Samurai's Whirlpool? I mean, from your experience, is there, because there's a really hardcore discussion constantly, fights going on. And, I just lean back. And for me personally, Wasabi, I just deinstalled it because it was too complicated for me. Because I don't know, maybe because also of the beginning of the bugs, the updates I had to do and too many functions. It's not for the average. And I consider myself as an average user. That's why I switched then to Samurai's Whirlpool and tested it. It's way, way easier, to be honest with you. Way easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no free lunch. And I would say with convenience, welcome trade-offs. Now it's a part of defining your security model and the threat model you're optimizing for, and based on the set of trade-offs that are openly available to you, you can make a decision, right, that is sort of as objective and enlightened as possible. For me, what Wasabi is the wallet I've been using. It is a good product. Mm-hmm. It requires a bit more research, and Max Hillebrand, for instance, shout out to Max, has done awesome tutorials on this.
Definitely.
There's a lot of content around Wasabi that makes it easy to use if you spend a little bit of time to sort of like research it. Mm-hmm. And it's a great wallet. As a desktop wallet, it's a good wallet. But it is very expensive in terms of like CoinJoin, the rounds, they cost a lot of sats. If you want to do, because now if you want to mix, let's say you have to mix, it's 0.1 BTC usually. And usually now rounds of CoinJoins are 100 in terms of the anonymity set. So, and it's 0.003% per an onset, which, makes it 0.3% for that UTXO, and which is, it's a lot of stats in the end. And perhaps we'll look back in 10 years and be like, oh my God, I spent, a lot of money on privacy. I still believe privacy is completely underrated in terms of value, right? The value that it gives to someone, to families, to in terms of protection and of defense, super, super important. And the reality is like, you may be paying all these fees on Wasabi and like leak because you've like mixed a, non-CoinJoin UTXO with a mixed UTXO, or somehow you like reconsolidated UTXOs post-mixing, or there's a lot of mistakes that a user can do when trying to be private on Bitcoin. Like being private using Bitcoin is completely possible, but it is still extremely hard. And now when it comes to your question related to Samurai versus Wasabi, I haven't used Samurai because I've been advised not to, and maybe that is, again, I should not trust necessarily the people who told me not to use it. I should verify it for myself. And I've seen the product on other devices, and it looks, that weren't mine. It looks great. The product experience looks to be a bit more accessible to the average user, as you were saying. But for instance, the fact that they were leaking user XPubs when you were, you know, initiating the dojo, that XPub was actually being sent to their servers is an issue, because we're doing privacy, we're like running the extra mile and educating ourselves and spending those sats and doing all these things for privacy, and somehow you're gonna leak like the most important piece of information, which is the XPub.
Which basically like
all the wallet history. So sure, you can mix that all you want.
It wasn't intentional. Like it wasn't. I hope it wasn't like it was really like a. Was it like a stupid mistake, a negligence, or what was it? I mean, a bug or?
No, I believe they were doing that by design. Until they allowed people to self-host their all the wallet and you know, and the node using the dojo. But again, I should perhaps stop here because I don't want to say things that are not 100%
yeah,
true
that's
and
what
accurate.
I'm, yeah, that's what I want to prevent. And by
I don't
the way,
want to spread
it's
FUD.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be to get better with if it's true with the mobile mixing. You know, everything is gonna,
yes,
it's gonna be more user friendly. You know, more intuitive. So, like,
I mean, this is amazing. Mobile mixing is amazing. Also, reducing the limit per round, that per UTXOs that you have to commit to rounds, right? If you could mix $50 worth of bitcoins, amazing, right? And if you could do it on mobile, and it sort of even does it automatically whenever you deposit,
that would
bitcoins,
be awesome. That would be
right?
Awesome. Yeah.
You don't even have to think about it. I mean,
yeah,
like that, I think, is the
that
future.
That would be
the,
such
the,
a relief right, for the average user out there, like to have it by default enhancing your, you know, and protecting your privacy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So let's hope for that. Yeah. But it's not going to happen by Christmas. It's not going to happen by Christmas, I guess. Sometime maybe next year or so. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? So. What's next on the horizon? Tip. Want to talk
horizon.
About Italy and Greece, the Orwellian nightmare, the oppression of the people, the confiscation of people's savings, whatever they have left in Italy and Greece. We will talk about the European Union. I mean, it's coming. It's right here. I mean, it's. I mean, Austria, I mean, it could happen anytime because it's all tied together. You know, the European Central Bank, psychopaths.
Yeah, so the war on cash is really scary. And the enforcement of it is even worse. I mean, the stuff that they're doing in Greece, where they're punishing people who are not spending enough using digital means of payment, it's insane.
Yeah, and don't forget Germany with their negative interest rates already on the first retail account, saving deposit accounts in some of the German banks already. Negative interest. I mean, this is crazy. So it costs money, right? To give it to the bank, it costs you money now. I mean, this is insane.
What's interesting is that the banks, they're still making money off that, meaning commercial banks, because commercial banks in a negative interest rate policy environment are technically charged to leave their money or assets or collateral in the central bank's ledger. Like the central bank is charging negative interest rates, right, on the commercial banks. But the commercial banks in that scheme, they can still make money if the spread they take, you know, if the fees that they charge to their clients is bigger than the fee that they're paying to the central bank, which completely distorts the notion of money and capital markets and everything. It makes everything upside down, like a bit completely weird. And again, they're using those narratives in terms of like, yeah, you know, we're storing your money for security, and so it makes sense for us to charge you a fee for that. I mean, it is completely immoral. It is pure theft, and it really pisses me off, to say the least. But what can we do? I mean, that's the only lever that the central bank, the European Central Bank, has in terms of you know, stimulating the economy. And they still, you know, if they want to meet their target of inflation and of roughly 2%, they got to keep on doing this. They got to stimulate those spendings, you know. And so going under the horizontal axis when it comes to interest rates, it does incentivize people to spend. Because you're like, holy shit, like, I'm losing money in my bank account. Might as well go and spend it on Starbucks or on Walmart stuff. Oh, by the way, there's a huge discount this weekend. I'll go there and buy a bunch of shit I don't need. You know? This forced consumerism is dramatic. I mean, and again, you don't want to be like, and I remember we spoke about this, like, you don't want to be the cynical Bitcoiner who's like, oh my God, the world is blowing up and people are poor because they're forced to consume, and they're unhealthy because they're forced to eat fiat food. And, you know, I think it's Saifedean Omous, yeah, who quoted that fiat food for fiat, yeah, currency, you know, fiat art, fiat real estate. So again, yeah, another random rent in Montreal, there's a boom in real estate because it's one of the single city in Canada that hasn't been affected too much with real estate inflation, mm-hmm, whether it's like just the price of real estate or rent cost. Mm-hmm. And so it's still pretty affordable. And now you're seeing this explosion of perishable real estate in a few neighborhoods close to downtown, which is called Griffintown, where you had these beautiful post-industrial buildings and warehouses, you know, brick walls, super thick stone-built walls, like solid stuff that was built to last. And now you're seeing these glass-made buildings with very cheap materials that look like they're already leaking their colors, or that basically don't seem that they're gonna last too long, and they're not even finished to be built.
Oh my God, this is total misallocation and high time preference investment building shit.
Well, exactly. It's like, because there are government subsidies for real estate investment. Mm-hmm. And the firms deploying capital in that market, they're looking to make a profit in the next, 5 years maybe? So they have their cash flow model, they get those subsidies from the government, and they build those things because they're like social housing, for instance, and they build something really shitty, low quality, whatever, get their return back very shortly, and then they exit their positions. They made their, you know, yearly compounded, 10%, 7% interest return, and then they're gone, and they don't care about the rest, right? And then the city will have to deal with this in 20 years when this thing is like collapsing, and they have to basically, you know, tear it down and rebuild it again. And Keynesians will say, yeah, but it's good. We're creating jobs and we're stimulating the economy. And like, that's the, you know, it's the broken window fallacy, right? This notion that, oh yeah, sure, you can just rebuild on stuff that was crappy in the first place. I mean, well, but all these dollars you're allocating there will not be allocated elsewhere where they could have been way more productive. So anyway, it's funny that Bitcoin allows us to build those mental models, mm-hmm, so that then you can apply those filters around you and you realize, damn, this is real. You know, we speak about, yeah, high time preference, real estate is a thing. For food, it's the same thing, man. I mean, I've been personally experimenting with intermittent fasting or like multiple day fasting, and it's hard. And I don't want to be, you know, the cliche like Bitcoiner or Silicon Valley bro who does fasting and brags about it. But at the same time, it really is, again, a very real gratification delay and low time preference. And you realize the benefits that you get from it versus going to Starbucks in the morning, getting a little croissant at 9 a.m. and then eating a little snacks in the office at 11 a.m. and then going for lunch at 12:30 and then having another coffee break at 3 and eating a few biscuits. You know, like I used to do that and I felt like garbage.
Yeah.
I was, you know, yeah. I had anxiety.
You're exhausted, tired, and you burnt out. You're literally physically burnt out, you know?
Yeah.
Your sleep is fucked up, you know? You know, like diet, nutrition, health, wellness, you know, it's such an individual process, you know, if you go really deep into it, you know, because there's that's why not everybody, you know, it maybe is made for, because I was like vegan for 6-7 years, many years ago, 6 or 7 years. I was vegan, like from one day to another. And then, you know, for many years now, I started eating because maybe of all this, you know, low time, logical, and really scientific based Bitcoin science sort of, you know, I started eating meat again, you know, it's funny, but it's really individual journey also with fasting and how you know, I'm trying to like quit coffee. It's you know, cause it does, it's not good for me. I feel it. It's not good for me.
Oh man, that's going to be a hard one for me. That's right.
You need some caffeine. I know at your work, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing. I've been embracing new, like, stoic lifestyle attributes, I would say, more and more. And I truly see, like, a benefit. Whether it's placebo effect or it's real, I don't mind. It's working. And it really requires self-discipline, because now I think with fiat currency, we live in a world of abundance of food, abundance of you know, money, abundance of sex, abundance of everything. And sex, I mean the bad one, like porn and all this. And then so it's really hard to embrace the opposite, like, you know, scarcity, like seeing fewer people but building deeper relationships, doing less busy tasks in your work but actually focusing on the stuff that truly matter. And I feel like, again, Bitcoin allows you to connect all these dots, and you just like realize, holy shit, by being disciplined and artificially constructing scarcity around things, around a world of abundance and just crazy amount of things available at all times. You know, another thing, Netflix and shows, right? It's another thing of abundance. Like we're fed with abundance today, and abundance brings comfort in a way, because you don't have to worry about anything. Things come to you and it feels good, but that's short term. Long term, you get hit with diseases if you're, you know, having abundance of food, or mental health issues if you have abundance of, you know, not doing exercise and sitting on your sofa and like eating stuff and watching shows and not seeing people. It's funny because all these models, they really tend to align pretty well together, and you realize that, you know, hard money, which is a scarce money, which is valuable, only exists because of proof of work, right? And we've spoken about this at great length. And this is because you have proof of work, which is protected by the law of thermodynamics, which is like you can't create energy out of nowhere. It has to utilize bunch of different inputs. And those inputs come from the real world, quote unquote, the real material world that is bound by the laws of physics and chemistry. That proof of work also is true for all things that are valuable in one's life, meaning a healthy body, you know, a six pack that you've been dreaming of. Well, that thing is proof of work. You can't get it like that. You can't pay for it. You can't get it easily. It's actual discipline and work. And that's the same thing for relationships and whatnot. So I don't know, this is completely a random stream of consciousness, but I've been thinking more and more about this, and with a really good friend of mine, Antoine. Shout out to Antoine, who's brought me on that path of stoicism. And you know, it's uncomfortable, but it's extremely rewarding, medium to long term.
Great tip.
Yeah, that was random.
That was good. That was I find it good to wrap this up. So I really enjoyed this tip. Let us repeat this next week. We'll have a couple more different topics and you know, brainstormings by next week. Yeah, thank you so much for your brainstorming and your, you know, your input.
That's great, awesome, man. Thank you so much. You're a great co-host. Yeah, I love these completely random streams of consciousness. They're great.
Yeah, exactly. So with that, yeah, I would just want to wish you a happy weekend. Enjoy your weekend, Tip.
Yeah, have a great weekend as well. Take care, man. And see you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
All right. So that was another limitless rabbit hole talk recap with my co-host Tip or Thibaut Maréchal. Really enjoy these talks because, you know, we can go a little bit outside the box, go, you know, within the spectrum of all, you know, relevant topics that are interconnected within and around Bitcoin. So please, if you love this, if you love these talks, share them, like them, subscribe to my channel, YouTube channel, podcast channels, whatever you have. Give me a positive review on Apple, iTunes, or any other podcast platform. Give me a 5-star rating if you can, if you loved it. Yeah, thank you so much for support. By the way, if you are an ethical sponsor, somehow connected to Bitcoin, ethical sponsor, please get in touch with me. I'm looking for a sponsor. I would prefer one or two, you know, prime co-sponsors, so I can, you know, do these interviews, these talks with professional equipment live at those places where we travel to. Like, I would love to go now to Uruguay, where this, you know, Bitcoin conference and or whatever it's called, the conference where Andreas Antonopoulos also is speaking, taking place. So I would love to go these places and really have face-to-face personal talks with these really beautiful minds, such as Andreas Antonopoulos, and bring you more content, more high quality content, whether it be video, high quality video or high quality audio interviews with my professional equipment. But until then, I have to do this online. So if you are an ethical sponsor who has an ethos, who has a vision, who has a great product service to deliver, to offer, please get in touch with me, kd@kvandavani.com or hello@thetotalconnector.com. Please follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, handle is kvandavani. On Telegram, there are two groups for example, Austrian Vienna meetups, Bitcoin meetups only. It's called Total Bitcoin Meetup. And the other one is called Telegram, The Total Connector, it's one word, or Total Bitcoin Meetup. You can also follow me on, you know, subscribe to my YouTube channel, /Kvandavani, YouTube, youtube.com/c/Kvandavani. And yeah, you can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. It's also /Kvandavani. So thank you so much for your support. Thanks so much for listening and for sharing this content, and together we can make this evolution, this monetary evolution, happen, and that is called Bitcoin. Thank you so much and have a great weekend. Bye.